This is Bad Cop No Donut for the week of February 3rd, 2005. With your weekly wrap-up of North American police brutality, misconduct, and corruption, I'm Ron Anisich at CKLN in Toronto.
If you're repeatedly assaulted in a town and the police and sheriff's department won't do anything about it, you're not going to live in that town. If you go to the state of Wisconsin and they won't do anything about it, you're not going to live in a state. These women are scattered to the four directions, literally.
Stay tuned after this week's headlines for a closer look at Whitehall, Wisconsin police officer Daniel Wineski, who was recently convicted of sexually assaulting a 14-year-old girl and sentenced to 7 years in prison. Later in the show, we'll be speaking with Terry Miles, who worked hard for many years to expose Wineski, who had also committed a litany of other sexual offenses during his nearly 30-year career as a police officer. But first, these headlines. This week, a police officer in Rock Hill, South Carolina, was extremely lightly disciplined for using a stun gun on a 75-year-old woman in a nursing home last October. The woman had become distraught when she could not locate a sick friend at the nursing home and police were called. A report issued last week says that Officer Hattie Jean Macon acted prematurely when she used the taser on the elderly woman. The officer received a verbal warning and was required to attend a taser training class. The victim of the attack was charged with trespassing and resisting arrest. Her lawyer says that the woman will plead not guilty to the charges and is considering a lawsuit. One of the two officers involved in a taser death in Lawrenceville, Georgia last May was placed on administrative leave this week, but not for killing the man. The man died of a heart attack after being shot 5 times with a taser. One of the officers involved with that incident, Sergeant Michael Mustachio, was placed on leave for an incident where he killed a dog in December. The family of the dead man has filed a civil rights complaint with the FBI. A prisoner in Toledo, Ohio, died in custody this week after being shot twice by a stun gun, once by police and once by corrections officers at a jail. Toledo police used a taser on the man while arresting him for loitering, resisting arrest, and obstructing the police. Officers at the jail used a taser on the man after he banged on a window. The man was pronounced dead at hospital, and the names of the officers responsible for the man's death have not been released. Stun guns manufactured by Taser International are currently in use by over 6,000 law enforcement agencies worldwide, primarily in the United States and Canada, as well as by corrections services and the U.S. military. Taser International is now under the scrutiny of the United States Securities and Exchange Commission and the Attorney General of Arizona, Taser International's home state, because of their claims that tasers have not been responsible for any deaths. Recently, a U.S. military study that the company is quoted to bolster their safety claims revealed that further study was required on the effects of stun gun use on people with various medical conditions, as well as people taking certain prescription and illegal drugs. A November report by Amnesty International linked 74 deaths to taser use by police in the United States and Canada since 2001. In Canada, taser-related deaths have been the subject of at least a half dozen coroner's inquests. Since that time, media reports suggest that the number of taser-related deaths has drastically risen in the months following the release of the Amnesty International report. Tasers use a 50,000-volt shock to subdue their victims, either through direct contact or through two wire barbs that hook into the skin and are attached to the handheld part of the stun gun by two 20-foot wires. This week, the City Council in Cincinnati rejected a policy that would have prevented police from using stun guns on children younger than 10 years old.
Marvin was supposed to be protected. Instead, he was killed by a drunken cop.
A police officer in Detroit has been charged with killing a pedestrian after a drunken car crash. Officer Stephen Compton appeared in court on Monday and was charged with manslaughter and operating a vehicle under the influence of alcohol. The family of the man killed is outraged that Compton was released on personal bond following his arraignment. Compton is facing a possible 30-year sentence if convicted. Police in Mekon, Wisconsin, have admitted to a series of preventable mistakes that ultimately led to the suffocation death of a 20-year-old man last June when police placed a vinyl biohazard bag over the man's head. Clearly, one mistake was not teaching the officers the difference between a transport hood, which are occasionally used by police to prevent being bitten or spit on by those they arrest, and the biohazard bags which suffocated the man to death. Another mistake was not reading the clear instructions written on the package containing the bag which suffocated the man. Another error, although not one which the Mekon police are admitting to, was the light discipline received by the officers responsible. Officer Gregory Klobukowski, who placed the bag over the man's head, was suspended for 1 month without pay. Captain Mark Zupnik received a letter of reprimand, and Sergeant Paul Neumeier received a letter of instruction on police policies and procedures. Another officer connected to the events, Captain Dennis Birch, has retired and will not be disciplined at all. A coroner ruled the death accidental. The victim was arrested at a traffic stop for possession of drug paraphernalia. The man's family has taken steps to pursue legal action against all of the agencies involved with the arrest. The chief of the Mekon Police Department says that he thinks the punishment received by his officers was appropriate, and Officer Klobukowski says he is relieved that the investigation is over, and it confirms that the man's death was an accident. A police officer in El Mirage, Arizona, has been accused of brutalizing a 16-year-old boy in an incident captured on videotape last weekend. According to the victim of the beating, Officer Alvin Mayhew called the boy a name. When the boy responded by calling the officer a punk, the officer attacked the boy. The events were caught on videotape by a neighbor who grabbed his camera when he heard a disturbance outside. A report released this week says that several police officers who were part of the New Hampshire Attorney General's Office Drug Task Force were involved in drunken fights with civilians at a Portsmouth bar last St. Patrick's Day. Exeter police officer John Petrosh became involved in a fight after someone looked at him the wrong way. Newmarket police officer Kyle Drew was also involved in an altercation the same night. The report claims that alcohol was a factor in both brawls. Earlier the same night, Petrosh and Drew were involved in an assault on a fellow officer at the same bar. Neither officer cooperated with investigators looking into the fights, and neither have been charged with a crime. Although civilian patrons at the bar all made statements to the investigators, none of the police officers present ever gave a statement. The investigation revealed that officers on the drug task force frequently drank alcohol at their office in Dover and uncovered evidence of other misconduct, including misleading investigators. The police commission in Springfield, Massachusetts, has voted not to discipline the officers accused of beating a school principal who was having a diabetic attack. The officers, Jeffrey Asher, James Kervick, James Shuchuk, James Moriarty, and Richard Reed, will return to active duty within 1 week. The officers, who are all white, smashed the window of the black man's car when he was semi-conscious and dragged him through the hole. They then beat, kicked, and choked him while accusing him of being on drugs. The incident is also being investigated by the United States Justice Department, who have not released their findings yet. The commission's decision will have no bearing on the lawsuit filed by the victim of the police beating. The former police chief in Merrill, Iowa, has been sentenced to 10 years in prison for bribery in a case connected to sexual misconduct. Chief Warren Palmer admitted to a judge that he had taken nude photographs of a woman who he had pulled over for speeding. The woman performed a sex act on him, and he agreed to let the woman go without a ticket and without arresting her for an outstanding warrant. In a plea agreement, Palmer pleaded guilty to a felony bribery charge on the condition that the other charges of third-degree sexual abuse and extortion would be dropped and that his prison sentence would not exceed 10 years. Part of Palmer's crimes were captured by a video camera mounted on the chief's squad car. Despite this, Palmer is now complaining in the media that his sentence was too harsh and even went as far as sending copies of the nude photographs he took of the woman to a local newspaper with the intent to portray the woman as a willing participant instead of as a victim of his misconduct. Last week, a police officer in Holmdel, New Jersey, was sentenced to 7 years in prison for attempted sexual assault of a 14-year-old girl. In October, a jury convicted Officer James Davis on 4 counts of official misconduct, 3 counts of attempted sexual assault, endangering by possessing child pornography, and attempting to endanger. Davis had chatted online and talked on the phone with a 14-year-old for the purpose of arranging a sexual encounter. The 14-year-old was really a pair of undercover police officers who recorded the emails and phone calls with Davis. Davis's lawyer plans to appeal the sentence. An officer in Maywood, Illinois, has been charged along with 6 other people for attempting to bribe police officers to ignore drug trafficking activities. An investigation began last August after a man attempted to bribe a police officer. Officer Arian Wade is accused of tipping off one of the individuals who the investigation focused on. He's charged with felony official misconduct and criminal drug conspiracy. Wade is facing a possible 50 years in prison. The family of a 16-year-old boy in Markham, Ontario, who was killed by police, has had their $4.3 million lawsuit settled out of court. The boy was killed in 1996 by Officer Robert Witch, who was subsequently charged with manslaughter, a charge which he was cleared of. The terms of the settlement, which come after almost 3 weeks of what was expected to be an 8-week trial, have not been disclosed, nor has the York Region Police Department admitted any liability in the killing. Another case is being heard in the massive RCMP investigation of the Toronto Police Department. Constable Nick Morris is accused of testifying in court on behalf of a convicted drug addict and car thief with ties to organized crime. Morris is one of 3 Toronto officers who testified at a hearing where the man was trying to regain his license to sell cars. Morris also violated procedure by not informing his superiors in writing that he was attending court while on duty and in uniform. Morris is also accused of performing an unauthorized computer check on both the car dealer and his girlfriend. The sheriff of Marshall County, Alabama, removed a homophobic letter that he wrote from a government website this week. Sheriff Mac Halcomb said he removed the message from the website and placed it on a personal one to avoid any potential lawsuits. In his letter, Halcomb refers to homosexuality as an abomination and a despicable act. The sheriff has made no apology for his views and is indignant when what he sees as his right to free speech is being challenged. The county has received many emails and letters in support of the sheriff. A police officer in Tacoma, Washington, was found guilty of raping a 12-year-old girl. Jurors at the trial of Officer Michael Torres believed the testimony of the young girl over that of the 39-year-old officer. Prosecutors claimed Torres forced the girl to perform sex acts on him on 2 occasions at the officer's residence. After the trial, the officer was fired from the Tacoma Police Department, and he will be held in custody until his sentencing in mid-March. A police officer in Shreveport, Louisiana, has been convicted of rape. According to evidence presented at the trial of Officer Fred Harris, the officer pulled over a woman with 2 outstanding warrants in January 2003. After accepting money from the woman in exchange for not taking her to jail, Harris said that the money would not be enough and took the woman into custody, drove her to another location, and raped her. Harris was also charged with an attempted sexual assault of a 14-year-old, but was cleared of that charge. Harris's fellow police officers say that he was transporting a young female prisoner to a detention facility when he pulled his car over and attempted to have sex with the girl. This week, the government of the District of Columbia agreed to pay $425,000 to 7 people who were arrested by police at a protest at a downtown park in September 2002. The police also acknowledged that the 7 were falsely arrested and promise changes in police procedure. A class action lawsuit filed by 400 others who were falsely arrested at the same time and detained for up to 36 hours has not been settled. A report issued by a city councilor said that police intentionally tried to cover up the events leading to the arrests. In addition to the murders already mentioned in this program, police also killed people this week in Newark, New Jersey, Mount Holly, North Carolina, Sanger, California, Rohnert Park, California, and Tampa, Florida. Many years ago, Terry Miles was a resident of Whitehall, Wisconsin. He began to hear stories of a police officer who had been violating the women of the town. After an incident involving one of Miles' friends and his wife became known to him, Miles vowed that he would not rest until the officer, Daniel Wineski, was brought to justice. Miles then went to great lengths to uncover a series of events, many of which have come to light only recently, where Wineski violated, raped, and assaulted women in Whitehall. Last year, Wineski was finally charged with one of his offenses and found guilty of forcing a 14-year-old girl to perform a sex act on him in his squad car in 1996. Earlier, I spoke with Terry Miles on the phone from Wisconsin about his quest to bring Wineski to justice.
Okay, when I got out of the Marine Corps, I got out in June of 86, and by late 87, 88, I was back in Whitehall. And I was in a bar, and a friend of mine told me that Wineski had raped his girlfriend during a traffic stop. And there's three other women in there that all said, this is true, and the police and sheriff's department won't do anything about it. So they asked me for help.
So when they asked you for your help, what were you thinking that you could do to help them out?
We could find women that would talk, and we would go to WEAU TV 13 in Eau Claire.
So you have a local television station. Do they have a fairly good record of dealing with these kind of stories? Or
actually, they really don't have a record of it. I don't know this for a fact, but I got a friend that was in communication, and she told me that WEAU has the smallest listening audience in America. It's very, very rural out there. Trumbull County has 27,000 people in 715 square miles.
So your friends told you about this one incident, and apparently these other three women that you mentioned, had they had the same thing happen to them, or they were just backing up the story of the person?
No, they were all three victims, and they didn't want to go to the TV station. They were afraid of the cops.
Did any of them file a formal complaint?
I think Steve Amundsen's girlfriend did. That was a friend that came to me.
And you told me something interesting about what happened to Steve after this complaint was made.
It was after the rape and before 88. There was a few bad checks, and then there was a question about taking a... He worked for a car lot, and he got in an accident. And I believe the dealer's insurance wouldn't pay for it. And he got charged with taking a vehicle without the owner's consent, and he wound up getting sentenced to some jail time for that.
And your theory is that he was targeted because
he spoke out. He was mad that Wineski had assaulted his girlfriend, and he had tried to stop it. Steve did wind up going to prison later on in 91 because of his and my attempt to stop Wineski again.
And you mentioned a moment ago that you had made an attempt to find other victims. How did that work?
I was finding them, and I didn't realize what I was up against. I was kind of naive then. And in the process of asking for these women, someone apparently went and told one of the cops what I was doing, and a man who I knew to be an undercover narcotics informant who operated under the alias of Logan Hansen confronted me and told me that if I kept it up, I would wake up with coke in my car and cops in my driveway, and I would be headed for Waupun. Wisconsin, Waupun is prison.
So the police threatened to plant drugs on you and have you arrested?
Yep, to plant drugs in my car and have me arrested.
How did you actually find the other victims?
It was really easy, just like it was this time. You just go to a bar and ask. I just walked into a bar and I said, hey, does anybody know anything about Wineski and the girls? And the names come.
How many people did you find out that he had assaulted in the end?
I probably talked to maybe 25, 30 people before they came and threatened me.
So you've been accumulating this evidence, and you found these 25 women. What happened next?
That's when I was... None of them would be willing to go up to TV 13 and talk. And before I could find... I wanted three. I don't know why, but one would have been sufficient. But that's when I was confronted by the informant and threatened with having cocaine planted.
Did you make complaints to the police or anyone else for that matter?
No, I was told by the victims and my friend Steve, not, it won't do any good, you'll just get in trouble. Okay, in 91, the hotel bar, the bar where I was confronted, that place was rated by law enforcement for some cocaine traffic they accused the owners of it. When they interviewed me, I had a tape recorder in the house, and it had malfunctioned. I didn't get anything on tape. That was always the plan, that if they're all in on this together, the only way we'll expose it is to get them on tape talking.
So the police were in your house?
Yes.
For what reason?
They wanted to talk to me about cocaine traffic in the hotel bar.
Were you in the bar at the time?
Yeah, it was a regular drinking spot of mine. I went there quite a bit.
This is a small town, isn't it?
Yes, 1,500 people.
1,500. So they come and talk to you at your house regarding the cocaine trafficking, and I take it, because you're telling me you recorded this conversation, that you attempted to engage them about Wineski?
Yes. And the reason that I didn't was there was a state agent there from the Division of Criminal Investigation, Sheriff Daryl McBride, who had a reputation as being a bad cop, Deputy Randy Niederkorn, who is now currently the sheriff of Trempealeau County, and I felt that bringing up Dan Wineski and the sexual assault with the sheriff and the state agent in there would be, it would be risking my life.
Did anything come of that? You weren't arrested at that time.
No, they just took a statement from me saying that I had never seen cocaine sold in a hotel bar, and that was it.
Okay.
The reason they came out to my place was they didn't have enough evidence to do anything with that bar. They did what's called a John Doe hearing, and they brought in somewhere between 100 and 120 people and questioned them about what went on in a hotel bar. They got two people out of the 100 and some that actually testified. Actually, in 91, I was painting billboards along the highways. My friend Steve was with me, and I came up with the idea that why don't we call up his wife and we'll pretend to be the angry father of a 16-year-old, and maybe that will get things moving enough that people will start talking, and then we can get the TV stations back in there.
Did you do it?
Oh, yeah.
Did it work?
Steve was pulled over. They tried to pull him over for squealing his tires at a stop sign, and he didn't want to be pulled over by them. He took him on a rather high-speed chase, and they kept him in jail on a probation hold, even though his probation was up from that check and car thing before. His time was served, his probation was up, but he still owed restitution on the car, so they extended his probation on that. They kept him in jail for approximately 30 days, or 60 days, and then they just told his wife, the jail's full, we don't have any place to keep him, we're sending him to prison. And the next day they put him in a squad car and took him to a medium security facility.
For 30 days?
Yes, and I have documents showing that his court date was set for, I believe it was January 29th, and I have letters from him postmarked from prison prior to January 29th, as early as January 2.
So do you think they did this because they found out that you had called Wineski's wife?
Yeah. We didn't actually make too big of a secret of it.
Oh, I see. So this is still in the early 90s, and you've already found a good number of women that have been violated by this cop.
Yeah.
What was the next step then?
After that, I didn't hear anything.
For how long?
Until the year 2000.
And what did you start hearing then?
My house had been robbed, and I was involved, so they messed it up really bad. That's a story in itself, but I went back to get my taxes done. I had a good tax preparer. Due to the burglary and the way the cops treated me, I had to sell my house and just leave that side of the state for my own safety.
So the cops somehow made you feel that your life was in danger if you stayed in Whitehall?
Yes.
And you moved to, you say, the other...
City of Ripon.
So quite far away from Whitehall.
Yeah, it's on the opposite side of the state. I went back to get my taxes done. And while I was there, I met a woman, and I explained to her why I had moved across the state and everything. And she goes, yeah, you know what happened to me? And I just explained to her about the burglary. She goes, you know what happened to me? Her son had been pulled over and arrested for drunk driving and possession of marijuana. And the very next night, Wineski started following her home from work. Well, at the end of the week, when Esky pulled her over and walks up to the car and he goes, you know, your son's in a lot of trouble. He could be facing prison time, probably get a couple years out of it. And I've got a speeding ticket here for you, but I can take care of everything for a blowjob. That's when I realized that it never stopped, and I thought, well, my God, this started in the early 1980s. It's been almost 20 years. And when I got back home, I started calling up friends of mine from high school and saying, hey, you know, do you remember all that stuff Winnesky did with the girls back in the 80s? I'm like, yeah, and I said, well, he's still doing it. I said, we got to start talking to somebody and put an end to this.
So what came next?
Then I sent a package down to Division of Criminal Investigation.
I just want to clear that up. They're the state authorities in
Wisconsin?
Yes,
that's the
Wisconsin.
Number one investigators in Wisconsin.
Okay.
And I went to a man named David Collins. What I did not know was that he was originally from Trempealeau County. He had started out with the Trempealeau County Sheriff's Department.
Which is the county which contains Whitehall.
Whitehall is the county seat.
Okay.
So the Whitehall Police Department and the Trempealeau County Sheriff's Department share facilities. Okay. So now this David Collins is in charge of white-collar crime for the entire state. He's the one that decides whether or not crooked cops are going to be investigated, then he hands the cases to the agents. So I send the whole thing down to him after talking to him on the phone for probably 45 minutes. He gets it, told me he was on vacation. He'd read it when he got back. I called back in 2 weeks, and he told me that just from talking to me on the phone, I did not have a case. He said, do you hear this? There's a loud thump. And he goes, that's your package going in the garbage. I'm not even going to waste my time opening it up.
Okay, so what was in this package?
The tapes that I had made, because I had been recording my conversations with the police officers. Not the tapes. I had a list of tapes and what was on each one. I didn't send any originals or duplicates to Collins at that time. I had all the paperwork on my burglary, and I had a 3 or 4 page letter explaining the entire thing.
What were on the recordings? These are, you say they're conversations that you had with police officers.
With me and Sheriff Niederkorn.
Did they involve Winnesky at all? Obviously, yes.
Yes.
And what kind of things did the sheriff say?
That was pretty early on. And it started out, I was talking about my burglary, and I said, you know, I've been hearing stories about Dan Winnesky since I was 16 years old. And the sheriff said, yeah, I know. And later on, I would get several things on tape from Sheriff Niederkorn. But at that point in time, I had that and an explanation of what was going on in Trempealeau County.
And their reaction was throwing your documents into the garbage bin. So
yes.
So what did you do next?
Then I contacted the FBI.
And were they a little more helpful?
They said that I could not file complaints on behalf of the women. I had to find at least one woman that would come forward and do it herself. I talked to several of them, and they told me no, simply because they're scared.
So you take it to the state authorities, they throw it in the garbage, you take it to the FBI, and they say, go find us a witness. Essentially, go do the cops' work for them.
Yes.
And what do you do next?
Well, then I just kept getting more and more on tape. I started sending out copies of the tapes to the FBI, CBS, NBC, Fox. Everybody was getting everything. And this drug on for about 3 years. And I said, you know what, I'm never going to have a life again. I mean, this is not any way for a person to live. So I figured I got to come up with some way that after having wiped myself out financially, moving across the state and doing this for 3 years, there's got to be some basically really inexpensive way to get things moving. So I waited until August 2003.
Okay.
And that's when I handed out flyers.
Sorry, you said you handed out flyers?
That's during the parade. To all the people on the sidewalk in Whitehall watching the parade during Beef and Dairy Days.
Okay.
And the flyer reads like this. Hi, my name's Terry Miles. I'm working to make Trempealeau County a better place to live. Do you have a problem or complaint about law enforcement or the judicial system in Trempealeau County? Do you have knowledge of misconduct or illegal activity by law enforcement or courthouse personnel? Abusing power or authority for personal gain to get money, drugs, or sex? misappropriation or misuse of money and property, excessive or unnecessary use of force, law enforcement not responding to calls, law enforcement taking hours or even days to arrive at the scene of an incident, intimidating or threatening victims and witnesses, refusal to investigate or take statements, using drugs and alcohol while working or on duty. And then I went on to explain that I lived there for 32 years and this can't be allowed to go on. Well, I handed out about 400 of these during that block parade.
In a town of 1,500 people, you handed out 400 of these flyers. I can just imagine that the police would have been made aware of this almost immediately.
Oh, yeah. They were.
So first, let's talk about, before we talk about any reaction that you got to the flyers from concerned individuals, let's talk about how the police reacted, I guess, first.
They didn't like it. The sheriff threatened me with civil suits. He told me that the deputies were actually going to take their working union dues and some of their own money and pull together to get a lawyer and file a class action suit against me.
On what grounds exactly?
Defamation.
Well, it doesn't sound like there was any defamation in what you just read.
Well, the reason that I picked these 8 points here, from abusing power to using drugs and alcohol, the reason I picked those 8 points was I could back every one of them up with the sheriff's own words on tape. No, this whole flyer is one big question. I went on to say I have personal experience and or firsthand information of all of the above. I was a resident of Trumbull County for 32 years before workforce my move to Fond du Lac County.
Did you get any response from victims of Daniel Wineski through the flyers?
Yes. I got to stop and think for a second because there's been so many in the last year. I get them confused. It was very effective. I brought in more. It was actually more witnesses to what went on.
So some of the people who got in touch with you described events that you were already aware of somewhat.
Yes. There's a classmate of mine. He came to me about a month or 2 months later, and he told me that back in the early 80s, while I was in the Marine Corps, a woman had asked him to ride home with her. And they're both sober. They're driving speed limit nice and safe. They got pulled over by Wineski, and when he saw that my friend was in the car, he got very angry and started yelling at him and went back in a squad car and left. Never explained to him why they were pulled over.
Then
there was that masturbating and Quick Trip thing, but that seems to be two separate incidents. The one that I was aware of, and the one that I did get a little bit of the sheriff on tape talking about, was there had been some money missing out of the cash register at Quick Trip and Whitehall. And like most Quick Trips, they have the two-way mirrors. There's a little closet behind there. Well, they asked the Whitehall Police Department to investigate, and one of the clerks walked in, out of the area, is a closet.
Right.
He had walked in there, and Dan was a little short guy, and I guess he was standing on a box looking through the two-way mirror with his pants around his ankles, masturbating. And now this one that just came up that Deputy Paul Wilson knew about happened in 1988, and he was masturbating in the candy aisle. The one that I heard about was in the mid-90s.
And this one in the candy aisle, apparently he cornered some young female employee of the store.
Yes. There's also a statement in the DCI records release from the girl. We just call her AR. Her name's public record, but I'd still like to keep it confidential out of respect to her.
Yes.
She's the one that he was actually charged with assaulting. He was masturbating in her yard in front of her window at one point in time in the late 90s.
So this would be, late 90s would be after the alleged offense.
Yes.
Just to remind people, the offense that he was convicted for was forcing a 14-year-old girl to perform a sex act on him in his squad car.
Yes, he threatened to have her and her sister put in foster homes if she didn't.
This is far from the only example of this kind of behavior that targeted extremely young women. Could you maybe tell us about a few other crimes that you became aware of over the course of your work?
Reading these reports from the DCI, apparently there were several of them that were a lot younger than 14. Basically, anything between 11 and 42.
And how many women are we talking about here?
I told the FBI between 300 and 400, and that's what it says in the documents that I contacted the FBI, and I gave a list of names to them, and the one name that's not censored out is the name that he was charged with, and then down below it says that Miles stated there would be 300 women involved.
So apparently the DCI, the state authorities, chose to investigate this at some point. Could you tell us what led to that investigation, especially seeing as they had previously dumped your complaint in the garbage?
Well, I was getting pretty sick of this whole runaround and the huge cover-up over this little petty burglar at my place. And one day I lost my temper and I told Sheriff Niederkorn, I said, look, every word you've spoken to me for the last 3 years is on tape. I own these tapes and I can do whatever I want, and that includes mass produce them and give them away, whole or in part. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. And Niederkorn wouldn't talk to me for about 3 weeks after that. And then he used a man named Joe Taylor, which is very interesting because Joe's been to federal prison for making pipe bombs. But he used Joe Taylor to call me up, acting as a liaison, to set up, quote, peace talks at the sheriff's house.
What was your response?
I went.
And how did it go?
I told the sheriff, offered to basically hang one of the suspects in the burglary, and I said, no, I'm not after her. I said the two men that actually broke into my house, and I would like to see the deputy that initially handled it, which was Deputy David Lingen. He later on wrote a letter of support for Dan Wineski, stating that they were best of friends. And I said, I want Dan Wineski for the sexual assaults of young girls. And Sheriff Niederkorn said, no, you're going to have to do that on your own. You can write up and bring charges on behalf of the state and present the evidence yourself. I said, well, can't you call the Department of Justice and ask them to come up and help? And he said, well, you know, I just sent a report down. If I sent another one, they're going to go, oh, this guy can't do anything right. I called the FBI and asked for the sexual predator squad or the police corruption squad. He goes, Terry, they won't come unless it's a bomb or a bank robbery. They won't even come for a bank robbery anymore. It's got to be a bomb. And even then, maybe. So the sheriff just, oh, no, lied to me. The sheriff directed me to an agency called Crime Victim Rights. I spoke to a woman named Georgia Black. I explained to her about the burglary, and then I threw in some of the Wineski stuff, and she goes, you need to be talking to the Public Integrity Bureau. So I put together a package that was about 3 inches thick. I had transcripts of probably half my tapes in there. All my complaints, there was 21 of them against police officers, the district attorney, the DA's secretary, shipped it all down to Madison. Robbie Lowry got it. He sent it to Agent Sogla. Agent Sogla called me up, talked to me. We negotiated whether or not I was going to give up a list of the women's names because this time I had no faith or trust in the state of Wisconsin. And it turned out that Agent Sogla was actually from Whitehall. He had been a Whitehall cop at one time. He graduated with some of my friends a few years older than me. So I talked to them, and they said, hey, Terry, Paul's one of the best guys there is. If anybody's going to do a good job, he will. So I called Paul back. I gave him a list of 5 or 6 names, and there it was.
And so the investigation was launched, and you mentioned earlier that they eventually ended up interviewing over 100 women.
Yes, 21 of them were beyond the statute of limitations.
Why was Wineski only charged with this one crime, considering how prolific his criminal activity seems to have been? Do you know?
I've been told there's a statute of limitations. It cuts off 14 and 15, that cuts off, and it gets much shorter for the 16 and 17-year-olds, and then for the adults, it's only 6 years for sexual assault.
And no other women were willing to come forward who had been violated within the past 6 years, I guess.
To testify, there is the other acts of evidence brought in as a motion. A motion to allow other acts as evidence. That was 8 other women prior to the statute of limitations that would be willing to testify.
Now, these are women who testified at the trial of the girl who was 14 years old when she was assaulted by Wineski.
There was no trial. He pled no contest and went straight to sentencing.
and 7 years.
7 years, and he can be out in 21 months on parole.
I know from what you've written to me that you have mixed feelings about that.
Yeah, I'm not very happy about that. It's, and I'm not very happy about, like, all the other officers, who, if they could have just stepped forward and did something, they would have at least got him out of, like, his position of confidence. You know, so, because most, if not all, of the assaults were while he was on duty. He was using his position as a police officer.
And there's some evidence in the report from the DCI investigation that some evidence that indicates that his superiors, in fact, were well aware of what had been going on. But you were aware of this already.
Yes, the chief of police admitted that he heard, and he uses the word rumors. He goes, I heard rumors of the masturbating in Quick Trip. He goes, I heard rumors of the sexual assaults. He had complaints from the lifeguard that he was spending too much time at the pool. The city administrator also said something about that. There was complaints from the high school that he was spending too much time up there.
There was some testimony that was given by his fellow Whitehall police officers, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, the other officers liked to park his squad car and watch through windows of houses where he knew that women and young girls were. He'd use binoculars. One deputy, I said it was in 1988 that he knew about Wineski masturbating in the candy aisle. There was Deputy Mark Ingervold had a rape reported to him when he arrested a woman for drunk driving. I have a copy of a notarized statement that was sent to Paul Agent Sogla. It's from a man in Independence. And he states very clearly that him and his brother both confronted Police Chief Larry Estenson about the Quick Trip masturbating incident. And Larry's reply was, if you can prove it, I'll do something about it. And they also confronted former Sheriff Ralph Weisenberger about a woman that was mentally handicapped. And they knew her last name, but they couldn't remember her first name. And Sheriff Weisenberger told them, like as if he already knew. So that would be Sheriff Niederkorn, Sheriff Weisenberger, Chief of Police Larry Estenson, Paul Losel, Paul Orson, Dale Lingen, Bruce Lama, Mark Ingervold. I think that's all of the officers that are documented. And then there's the city administrator, Lynn Johnson.
Is anyone planning to charge any of these officers who arguably were extremely negligent in their duties at the very least? Are they facing discipline or any kind of charges?
They asked Robbie Lowry about that, and he told me it's all a civil matter. The investigation has been stopped.
So if there is to be any justice, it will have to be some kind of a lawsuit.
Yes, and I filed a lawsuit against the city of Whitehall and Trumbull County for harassment and civil rights violations. But if these women aren't willing to come forward and testify at a trial, they're surely not going to get a lawyer and sue. In other words, it's almost all over, and I don't think that's right. When you realize what would have came forward in 88, there could be, 100, 150 assaults that would have never happened? Yeah, well, he was protected. There's also a statement in here from the girl, A.R., that she went to Police Chief Larry Estenson and said, I have a complaint. And Estenson said, well, is your complaint sexual? She replied, yes. And Estenson, well, I'm not on duty. You're going to have to come talk to me when I am.
And she made it clear that she was there to complain about Officer Wineski, right?
Well, yeah. She said, I have a complaint about Dan Wineski. She was very clear about that. And Estenson's first response is, was it sexual? And she had everything written down because she didn't know if she was going to be able to find him. And considering that reply, she went to the Department of Social Services to see it. And he wasn't in, so she left the envelopes on her desk, on his desk. The next day, her and her husband, this is several years after the assault. Mm-hmm. The next day, her and her husband were in Whitehall at the optometrist. They went back home. The cops showed up and arrested her husband for stealing four pairs of eyeglasses. He was never charged. That was the end of the end of the complaint and the end of the eyeglass situation.
So this is another distinct pattern here, that it seems as though almost any time anyone complained about this officer, they met with some kind of ill fate at the hands of his fellow officers.
Yes. It's that, for growing up in a little town of 1,500, we've always said it's like a cult. If you speak to one person in that courthouse, I don't care if it's social services, registered deeds, the VA, the county clerk, any of them, no matter who you talk to, you are speaking to the entire building.
I'm just wondering if you're planning on pursuing this any further, or...
Yes, there's actually several other acts of corruption in that area. There's other officers, county officers, that have been... It's been brought to my attention that they're known for the Wineski-style assaults. There's questions of some money in the courthouse that's unaccounted for. Nobody can seem to find it. $430,000 or $450,000 right off the top of my head. It's right in that ballpark. There's a lot of questions about drugs being used by deputies. I do have a letter from Sheriff Niederkorn stating very clearly that the deputies are not drug tested. Ever. They get tested at the time of hire, and after that, you're just good. They're county employees, and school bus drivers in Wisconsin have to take drug tests.
But not the police.
Not the Trapolo County Sheriff's Department. I said, and that is in writing. He signed his name to it. But that was one of my public records requests. I wanted to know the results of the last three random drug tests, and I got a reply back. Your request is denied because we don't drug test. Yeah, I've got, there's 400 and, I believe it's 430-some pages of the Wineski records that were released.
Just last week.
Yes, I've got other public records requests in for other incidents over there. I got the claim against the city of Whitehall and the claim against Trumbull County, which are both going to be, I'm going to have to file a lawsuit. And so, I'm really pretty swamped in paperwork right now. It's on my to-do list, but I won't be able to get around to it for some time.
You were telling me also that you're considering writing a book about all of this.
Yeah, The Midnight Ride. That was a euphemism for the sexual assaults in Whitehall. That's how common it was. Everybody knew. In my search for victims and witnesses, I talked to two people that did not know anything.
And two people out of possibly hundreds you spoke with.
Hundreds, easily. And one had only lived in Whitehall for maybe a year, and the other one had never actually lived in Whitehall. She lived in Galesville.
Well, Terry, it's arguable. I know you're disappointed that this officer, Wineski, is going to possibly be out of jail within 20 months, but you have to realize that had it not been for your efforts, then the 7-year sentence that he did get a couple of months ago would probably have never happened.
Yeah, it's. I went through every agency twice. I've got a file 3/4 inch thick of just letters that I mailed to the FBI. I can't believe it took this long. That long just to find someone that would listen. And then once they did listen, it's like they didn't want to hear it. And that's why the investigation was stopped, I believe.
So you spent almost 20 years on this.
I waited a very long time for the phone call. A friend of mine called up and said, "Terry, I thought you want to know. Dan got arrested today."
What was your first reaction when you heard that news?
Well, I had been in bed. I was just about to sleep, and I thought, "God, you know what? I think I'm going to go downtown and have a beer." And so I did. And the very next day, they let him walk on a $10,000 signature bond. He had a 9-month paid vacation. He was on paid administrative leave. He was arrested on March 15th, sentenced on November 10th. He was paid up until, I think, November 5. The city of Whitehall continued to pay him, and he was a free man for that whole time. And he did try to break the terms of his bond and contact one of the other 8 women that came forward to testify.
For what purpose? Do you know?
To make her not testify.
To threaten her?
Yes.
Was that ever brought up in court?
No, and I don't understand why his bond wasn't. Agent Sokola told me about that after it was all over.
This was one of the DCI investigators?
Sogla is actually like the one that I trust and like. Other than that, I don't have much faith in a DCI. To demonstrate their sheer incompetence, there's also some paperwork in this file that after Wineski was already in prison, Whitehall Police Chief Larry Estes was cleaning out his desk. He found the diary that belonged to AR. He called up Agent Sogla. Sogla said, keep everything in evidence. Estenson has this story about how everything that he took out prior to the diary went in a dumpster, then the dumpster went to the incinerator and was burnt. The diary stayed. It was like Estenson was cleaning out the desk and throwing stuff in a dumpster. He finds a diary, calls Sogla, but at some point in time, the dumpster went to the incinerator and got burnt.
So,
but it gets even more weird because AR told me back initially after the arrest that they had searched Wineski's house. And I'm thinking, well, if they got a search warrant for the house, why didn't they get one for his desk and locker at work? Because if this involves other women, he's not going to keep any evidence where his wife could find it. You know, why didn't they search his desk in March? Now you got a police chief who's, you know, accused of years of cover-up for this guy. He burns half the stuff in his desk and then calls up Agent Sogla and says, hey, you know what? I found a diary that belongs to that girl.
One of the strangest things that I remember from reading through all of the documentation that you've sent me already was the huge number of letters of support that Wineski got prior to his sentencing from various community members.
I have copies of them here, and most of those came from people that were tied to the courthouse one way or another.
Can you explain how this happened? Can you explain how so many people in the community, even after the officer had been found guilty of sexually assaulting a 14-year-old girl, how there would be so many people in a community that would be willing to write letters, very generous letters of support?
That I don't get. There was 5 of them. The ones at the hospital, I don't understand. The one, I believe it's a Brickner, is, I know one of these people is actually the principal of the Whitehall High School. And one of my friends took the letter to school and confronted him with it, and he became very angry and said that no one was ever supposed to see that except for him and the judge. He didn't realize that letter was a public record. And I think the cops coerced people into writing these by telling them it was going to be a private matter and no one would ever see it.
And, of course, documents submitted to the court are a matter of public record.
Yes. And with my years of living in Whitehall, it's very possible the police used whatever leverage they had. Because the saying is, with that courthouse, if one of them goes down, they're all going down. And if I can push a little bit harder and get someone else to look a little bit deeper, I still believe that all those officers that knew about the Wineski assaults that did nothing are just as responsible as he is. You know, in Wisconsin, there was a mother recently charged for allowing a 20-year-old man to sleep with her 14-year-old daughter. They're a boyfriend-girlfriend. She's being charged with felony of failure to protect a child. She's looking at several years in prison. That's a mother giving parental consent. These are police officers for the no one gave consent, including the victims. They're not even getting dismissed as officers.
What's the feeling in the town of Whitehall now? Do people in Whitehall feel better protected from the police than they did before, or better served by the police than they did before?
No. The new police chief of Whitehall is a man named Jeffrey Schaffner. Been a cop down in Portage for some time, but he was originally from Whitehall. And Dan Wineski's replacement is Randy Jensen. I believe that's his name. And I know he just got fired from the City of Independence, and I think he got fired one other one. I know he's been an officer in 3 different departments within the last few years. He's really young.
Do you know why he's been fired?
That I don't know. The City of Independence, I know, held a special city council meeting just to get rid of him. There's too many complaints about him. it's, you know, meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Terry, thanks very much for taking the time to speak with us.
One of the most moving moments in Wineski's time before the courts happened at his sentencing, when his victim, now 22 years old, gave her statement to the court. The following is her statement to the court, read by CKLN's Christiana Clemens.
Your Honor, this day for me has been 8 years in the making. The day when the man who is supposed to protect me, keep me safe, but instead assaulted me and stole my innocence, is brought to justice for his crimes. I have been living with an overwhelming fear of police officers that no one should have to live with, especially about a police officer. Over the last 8 years, I've thought many times about coming forward about Officer Wineski and what he had done to me, but I was so scared that he would kill me like he had promised to do so many times before. I figured that keeping quiet would be best. I didn't care that I was scared or that I was covering emotions that would someday erupt. All I cared about was if I stayed quiet, then I stayed alive and my family stayed safe. Your Honor, I'm only 22 years old, and I've never been able to enjoy life. I feel like I haven't even had a chance to live my life yet, because I have been living a life that Officer Wineski had created for me, and that, Your Honor, has been no life at all. For me, this is one of the final stages of justice, one of the last chapters in an emotional journey from victim to survivor. Officer Wineski took away my innocence and stole my childhood, but I refuse to let him have control over me or my life any longer. That is why I need to stand here today and tell you to your face, Officer Wineski, that yes, you tried to ruin me and scare me into hiding forever. You told me that I would never be able to tell, that no one would ever listen. Well, you were wrong. Because I am still here and people did listen. I am not that same scared and confused girl anymore. And even though it has taken me 8 years to figure out, I know now that it was not my fault. That you used your power and authority to take advantage of my trust and use it for your own sick pleasure. No, it was you. It was always you. You were the predator and I was your victim. Well, not anymore. Not ever again. With all this being said, Your Honor, I sincerely hope that Officer Wineski is punished to the full extent allowed under the law, as I feel this is the only way myself, as well as the other victims, will be assured our safety and that justice is served. I heard Officer Wineski's attorney say that he will remind the court of his client's over 20 years of service as a police officer. His attorney calls it service, and I ask, service to who? Because he most certainly did not protect me or the countless number of other women who fell victim to his assaults. I want to finish by saying that the other women are just as much a victim in this case as I am. And even though they may not have been able to stand in front of you today and share with you the effects that Officer Wineski's crimes have had on them, I can only hope that I have helped to ensure that justice is served for us all.
That's all for this week. Thanks for listening. Tune into this station for more next week. Email your comments and story ideas to ihatepigs@hotmail.com. From CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto, I'm Ron Anisich. Each week we end Bad Cop No Donut with a song. This week, it's Police State by Dead Prez.
You have the emergence in human society of this thing that's called the state. What is the state? The state is this organized bureaucracy. It is the police department. It is the army, the navy. It is the prison system, the courts, and what have you. This is the state. It is a repressive organization. But the state, and you, well, you know, you've got to have the police, because if there were no police, look at what you'd be doing to yourselves. You'd be killing each other if there were no police. But the reality is, the police become necessary in human society. Only at that juncture in human society where it is split between those who have and those who ain't got.
I throw a Molotov cocktail at the precinct. You know how we think. Organize the hood under our chain banners. Red, black, and green instead of gang bandanas. FBI spying on us through the radio antennas. And them hitting cameras in the street like watching society. With no respect for the people's right to privacy. I take a slug for the cause like Huey P. While all you fake niggas try to copy Master P. I wanna be free to live. Able to have what I need to live. Bring the power back to the street where the people live. We sick of working for crumbs and filling up the prisons. Dying over money and relying on religion for help. We do for self like ants in a colony. Organize the wealth into a socialist economy. A way of life based off the common need. And all my comrades is ready, we just spreading the seed.
The average black male live a third of his life in a jail cell. Cause the world is controlled by the white male. And the people don't never get justice. And the women don't never get respected. And the problems don't never get solved. And the jobs don't never pay enough. So the rent always be late. Can you relate?
No more bondage, no more political monsters, no more secret space launches. Government departments started it in the projects, material objects, thousands up in the closets. Could have been invested in the future for my comrades. Battle contacts, primitive weapons out in combat. Many never come back, pretty niggas be running with gas. Rather get shot in they back than fire back. We're tired of that. Corporations hiring blacks, denying the facts, exploiting us all over the map. That's why I write the shit I write in my raps. It's documented. I mean it. Every day of the week, I live in it, breathe in it. It's more than just fucking believing it. I'm holding in ones, rolling up my sleeves and shit. It's CeeLo for push-ups now. Many headed for one conclusion. Niggas ain't ready for revolution.
The average black male live a third of his life in a jail cell. Cause the world is controlled by the white male. And the people don't never get justice. And the women don't never get respected. And the problems don't never get solved. And the jobs don't never pay enough. So the rent always be late. Can you relate? We living in a police state.
Thank you.